This podcast is brought to you by Harry's. Please visit harrys.com and use promo code BALDMOVE, all caps, to get $5 off your first order. Welcome to The Watching Dead, the officially unofficial podcast for The Walking Dead on AMC. I'm Jim.
I'm Aaron.
And today we're doing our annual half-season wrap-up.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what we'll call it, the season 6A wrap-up. I don't know about you, but I did not particularly enjoy this half-season.
No. I thought this was... It started off very, very promising.
Yeah.
And then it... went quickly to the dogs, and they're all self-inflicted gunshots.
Like, to the frogs, really.
To the frogs.
Yeah.
They told it to the frogs and then fed it to them. I don't understand. It seems like a lot of these problems are... I mean, I always say it's laziness, that they just don't bother to connect dots or anything. I don't know, because it's like, it's not fair to say that... That Nicotero is not passionate about the subject. I would assume
sure.
that Kirkman isn't either. I don't know what Gimple feels one way or another, but it's inexplicable how little care goes into the crafting of this show. And it's also really interesting. Like, I listened to a lot of different podcasts last week for the first time. Usually I listen
specifically
to, like,
Walking Dead podcasts.
And I also listened to Nina's over at Project Fandom, and our buddies Chris and Jason over at Talking Dead.
All Walking Dead.
I listened
Dead
to like all of them except for I think maybe the Walker Stark, which I don't even think they're doing anymore.
I don't know. I don't know what's going on over there.
But I didn't get a time, and it seemed like there was criticism. Like, if you know the tone of the podcast, there was critiques of the show and kind of an ennui, and like, you know, Nina Perez is the one, like, a year ago, you guys are nitpicking and blah, and, like, Juwan, who used to get on every week on my thread and be like, you guys are fucking haters and all this stuff, they're all just pillaring this show.
Yeah, the Glenn death,
and it's funny,
or lack thereof, didn't really do them any favors.
And I think it's like, everybody gets to a certain breaking point, but, like, you know, even I was listening to Nina's like, whoa, you guys are being a little too harsh at places, because once you get to a threshold of disgust... That's when the real nitpicking starts, because you just really want to tear it a new one to justify, especially when you know you're going to get a deluge of, you know, defense from the hardcore fans.
And, you know, that's what I try to avoid here. I don't want to pile on just for the sake of piling on. I like to try and point out the flaws for maybe... having people be a little more discerning about their television tastes.
But that's the thing. Like, I mean, I'm going to be honest. I'm at my lowest point of the Walking Dead fandom since the season 3 finale.
Yeah,
now,
wow.
What brought me back from that was the fact that Mazera got ousted. Gimple, who had written one of the best recent episodes that kind of, like, made me feel bad, gleefully celebrating a Lori fiesta.
Uh-huh.
And he was one of the kind of the promising young writers, was given the reins of the show. And I'm like, okay, well, we'll give this guy some time to kind of see what he can do.
Yeah, yeah.
But I don't know. I mean, aside from my knowledge of what's going to happen in the near future of The Walking Dead, unless they just completely abandon the comic timeline, and presumably some really awesome trailers are going to cut together and show us at the end of January.
Oh, and Andrew Lincoln's already out there saying, yeah, it's bananas. The next half season is the best we've ever done, and it's the craziest, and I have a new weapon I'm using or some shit. Like,
yeah, I don't know what I'm getting excited for.
It's the same. Yeah, they
because,
say
like,
it every
time. Am I really
time.
Excited that, like, arguably the best, like, either the best or second best chapter of The Walking Dead history is coming up? Like, why? Every single big moment they've had from the comics, they have fucked up. In my opinion.
Yeah, no, fool me once, shame on you. Fool me six times, shame on me,
and it's
right?
Like, there's, like, not a new showrunner, honestly. Uh-huh. And, like, you know, that's the other thing. Is like, not only has the audience peaked, but it's receded.
Oh, really?
Season finale for season 5 was 17.29 million viewers.
Okay.
This year, it was 14.63. Still a massive show, but that's a huge fall off.
Yeah.
The average, like, week to week is about unchanged. It might be a million or two, but I feel like it's definitely... This show is no longer in growth mode. It's now kind of in shrinking mode, and I don't know what they're going to do to reverse that.
But like, they have 13 seasons left to do, Aaron.
They have infinite seasons left to do, and it doesn't always have to be like this monster. Like, if it got to 10 million, it'd still be something AMC is going to crank out. But, sure. I mean, I'm ready to end the Gimple experiment.
Yeah, you're right when you say that they just don't put the effort. It doesn't seem like they put the effort. Maybe it's just a fact that they're not quite as creative, but I've been reading a lot of interviews with Damon Lindelof after watching The Leftovers, and he goes into, he mostly lays out the process that they use to write. He likes to keep some of it a little mystical, not give you all the details, but he's constantly thinking, and the writers, I don't want to say that it's all him, but the writers they have are constantly thinking about, you know, here's the information that we want to give people. Uh-huh. What's the most interesting way to convey that?
Yeah.
And that seems like something they might be doing here, but maybe they're just missing the mark of it. Because I feel like trying...
Is it an execution problem?
Maybe so, yeah. I feel like they're trying to do those things. Like, give us
the thing.
Information in an interesting way.
Lindelof got a lot of shit for Lost. And, like, I don't really want to debate. Because every time you talk about Lost, you get the people like... Nuh-uh, your individual experience of the show is invalid. It was actually really awesome and was fully satisfying. Okay,
well,
great.
Your individual experience is invalid, and fuck yourself.
I'm glad you had that experience. It seems like the vast majority of fandom was disappointed and with the bait and switch that we got with the Lost. And I'm not part of that fandom. I felt like I saw what was happening early on in the run. I abandoned ship, and then I was glad that I did so.
Yeah.
But... If you read Lindelof, you can definitely see that he learned a lot from the experience. When I'm reading interviews from Nicotero and Kirkman and Gimple, the hubris that I'm getting and this just complete rewriting of reality, it reminds me a lot of the showrunner, I can't remember her name, that did The Killing, where she was trying to justify, like, it's not, oh, I hear this criticism and I don't agree with it, but I understand where it's coming from. They just don't acknowledge it.
Yeah.
Like when they're asked, like, oh, no, I think the fans loved what we did to the Glen and they thought it was exciting television. And we've gotten lots of stories from people that had an emotional experience. It's like, man, fuck you. We're hanging out in the fan central parts. Like if you're commenting to a podcast or you're on the Walking Dead subreddit, you are at the kind of nucleus of fandom, and there's a lot of various degrees of disappointment going on there. And if you're not in touch with your own audience, I don't know what kind of self-improvement mechanism is going to bring about a better show. And I don't need this to be The Leftovers, Jesus Christ, or Fargo.
Well, a little bit of self-awareness, right?
Yes.
Like you're saying, they just don't, either they don't have the self-awareness or they're refusing to acknowledge it. And they do, they realize that they're fucking up and they refuse to acknowledge it.
Honestly, I think
either way, it's bad news. Like, that's the thing about Lindelof. He seems to be very self-aware when he's writing and when he's also responding to criticism and thinking ahead of time, how will people criticize this?
Mm-hmm.
And I don't feel like that any of that is happening here.
Well, it's weird because, like, I'm trying to think, like, you know, what goes wrong. Because a lot of this stuff happened more or less exactly how it goes in the comic book. And the comic book gets away with stuff like you'll see Rick and Michonne having a conversation. And then they'll have a single pane of someone's reaction that overheard from the shadows. And they just have kind of like an angry expression on their face. And as a comic book reader... You're like, oh, shit, you know, Spencer saw that and, like, to borrow a phrase from the Telltale games and will remember it. And you can kind of pile on a lot of meaning and kind of stuff, whereas here they do this monologue and speechifying, and it doesn't seem like the adaptation is working.
Yeah,
I think the fatal flaw in this episode...
It has its moments.
The fatal flaw in this season was that Alexandrians were useless baby people. And there was no one gave serious consideration to Morgan's philosophy. No one gave serious consideration to the Wolf's philosophy. And no one really thought through some of the implications of Rick protecting these people. And maybe You know, like, these people are kind of unlovable. And I kind of, like, felt nothing when they were dying.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like,
sure.
Literally, when they were the first three episodes, when a lot of the Alexandrians are dying, I've never seen these people before.
Yeah.
What is that supposed to mean?
Nothing. I mean, it's supposed to be, you know, part of the action, like, show that is
I'm
the
naturally
Walking Dead.
On Team Rick because he's the protagonist. That's why I agree with him. When he's espousing a worldview that I kind of more or less agree with, and seems like it's the kind of tough thing you have to do in a pragmatic thing you have to do in a zombie apocalypse. But the show itself is saying, no, no, what you really need to do is take care of these people that can't take care of themselves. I don't know. With a guy who's got children?
Well, I feel like it's also a symptom of what this show is and needs to be, right? There's a lot of expectation going into a show like The Walking Dead where we want to see a lot of zombies and we want to see a lot of people dying. And if you don't have people like the Alexandrians to kill off every week, what are you going to do? You can't kill main characters that fast or you'll be out of main characters.
But I don't need to see. No, I mean, I guess I don't watch the show. And the other thing that worries me is that.
But it's
when
a zombie show. At its heart, like, you have those pieces that have to be put in place, and if yes. they're not, zombie fans are going to complain, right?
I get it, and that's where I guess I'm really afraid, because it's not just you and I that are bitching about this. It's also the Bill Simmons of the world, who I would call the anti-bald move. Not okay. that he can't okay. appreciate good television, because he does.
Sure, sure.
But he was engaging in Walking Dead. Like, I don't give a shit about any of these characters. I like seeing girls in tight pants run sure. around and killing zombies, and sometimes they get killed, and it's like I have a good laugh. And somehow they're making the show that's not really satisfying to anyone but hardcore fans of The Walking Dead.
Yeah.
Which is, what does that even, like, The Walking Dead,
it's almost the promise of The Walking Dead, right? Yeah. Like, this is what we said we wanted to make at the beginning, and now people are, like, the people who still buy into that and hope it can be that are still around, like us.
Yeah.
But the people who are the fans of what it's become are more like, I mean, I don't want to use this necessarily as a slur, but like CW fans, right? Like people who don't have as much experience with television and aren't as invested.
Yeah.
And are just there for fun. And maybe that's okay. But that's not what we do here, I guess.
No.
That's not what we're in it for.
You know, it's weird because I will say that, you know, people are like, well, why don't you just stop covering it? And honestly, the big reason is like, weirdly, The Walking Dead makes up a disproportionate part of the bald move culture. Like, when I think of from my own standpoint, memorable points and podcasts and phrases and gags and goofs, like, the Mad Men is similarly, like, that's another disproportionate part of bald move culture. But, like, a lot of the bald move culture and the stuff we yuck at and our inside jokes and stuff spawn from the Walking Dead. And I'm finding it less and less fun. And that's why I've always defended, like, you know, why do you guys cover this when you gave up on Americans, but you're still doing The Walking Dead? It's like, well, I have fun covering The Walking Dead. The Americans made me hate myself.
So that's, I feel like that's part of who we are. Cause like, I remember growing up, you know, it's like, we're going to go to these movies, and if they're great, we talk about how great they are.
Yeah.
And we love them and we have fun. And if they're bad, we rip them to pieces, and
well,
we have
even
fun
the shows
with
we
that,
love.
Right?
Like, even the Star Wars, I remember someone on our first Star Wars laughing because, like, we're massive fans, and yet 50% of the podcast were all of the illogical, stupid things about Star Wars that we've accumulated over 30 years of watching it.
Exactly.
That's something that's in our DNA. We like to rip on the stuff we love. We like to rip on the stuff we hate. A good time's had by all, but you know what you can't be is lukewarm.
Yeah.
You can't be average, and because you're good enough that, like...
Then you're a Jason Statham movie, and no one wants to watch it.
Yeah. Yeah, you're Transporter 3.
Exactly. Like, I just feel like this show caters to a different side of us, and there's a reason why we're still covering it. Not because it's great, but right. because it's fun for us. And, you know, I don't necessarily think we should stop doing it if the show is bad. We have tailored our coverage to the show being bad.
Because that's the thing. It's like, you know, when we'd stop covering Walking Dead, well, when is it going to be airing? What else is going on?
Exactly, yeah.
You know, how much do I actually hate covering it? Because that's the thing. At the end of season 3, I was pretty convinced we wouldn't cover season 4. But then we saw some trailers and we started thinking about, well, if they actually get away from the prison and, like, you know, we've always said they need to get on the road. Okay, we're back in and invested. that's where I'm at right now. Like, I, you know, I'm certainly going to see the second half of season six through, and I kind of know what's coming, and I would be shocked if the end of season six just isn't a ball of fire. And but, you know, The Walking Dead needs to be more than two or three good episodes out of eight.
Absolutely, yeah.
And, you know, you can't just be boring, and you can't be this bullshit, very shallow psychological analysis that we've already done.
And repetitious. I mean, this show is repetitive as fuck.
Right. Like, I long for a love triangle at this point.
Sure, just
anything
to mix
to
it up.
To break the tedium of, you don't know what this world requires this, and all, you can't be like this, and do I belong here? And I, all that shit needs to go, man. It's the new Rick, Shane, and Lori.
Yeah, it's old hat. We've
like, had
this discussion
before. The prize you're fighting
before.
For is not worth it.
Well, you might get your wish. I mean, Sasha and Abraham are going to come back, and Rosita's going to lose her mind, probably. She's going to end up with
Denise. Do you think
so?
You think Rosita loses her mind?
No, I mean, she's not going to lose her mind, but she's going to be disappointed. She's saying, like, oh, yeah, me and Abraham could work out. Well, he just professed his love for someone else, so...
So other than bitching and being disappointed, what are we doing on this wrap-up podcast? I assume we have fan commentary.
Oh, yeah. We have a lot of feedback.
Is there things? I've got some. I mean, the thing is, this is the real challenge I'm having, y'all, is there is good reason to be excited about the future of The Walking Dead based on the core comic material.
Okay.
However, every piece of brilliant thing that they've done in the comics, I think they fucked up in the show to either large or small degree. And I'm having a very hard time getting excited for, like, what's to come. Like, yes, there's a lot of exciting casting news. And yes, the storyline that they're doing is going to be super interesting. But, you know, I feel like they nailed the casting of Abraham and Rosita and Eugene. And that shit has kind of been, like, every time they do a deep dive on Abraham... Every time, like, Eugene just won't change. He won't grow as a character.
Sure.
He has defining moments where, okay, he is now going to pivot to something different than what he is, and they keep having him limp wrist the machete and fuck up, and that's getting old. Like, that's not character growth. That's running home to who the character was when we first met him.
Sure.
So I don't know what to get. I got plenty of stuff to say on the spoilers, but... It's not with conviction or excitement. It's more with dread.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, at this point, we have been conditioned to think that they're not going to follow any of those comic book cues, right? And if you like those comic book cues and you really want to see that on the screen, I think you're going to be disappointed when they change it up on you inevitably.
Yeah, and it's weird because, like, you know, for my money, the best part of the comics, the one that was the most emotionally involving... was little boy Carl being left alone with his dad, who he thought was dying and might turn into a zombie. And I feel like they delivered on that material. The problem is, by fucking around in the prison and the farm for as long as they did, Chandler Riggs was now too old to carry that material and give it the weight that it needed. Like, a 14-year-old boy in that situation is much emotionally different than a 9-year-old boy.
Yeah.
So, like, that's the one thing where I felt like they did it exactly right, and the writing was there. It's just, through nobody's fault, they just missed the timing because of other poor decisions they made. You know, God, I...
And, you know, that's multiple showrunners in. Like, you can't... How are you going to fault Gimple for that, right? Like, well, they fucked around in the prison, and they fucked around on the farm. What am I going to do with Carl now that I've got to tell this story?
Well, you know, like I said, I think that the first two episodes worked well. In hindsight, I think the first episode worked well because of the disjointed storytelling made the main plot kind of obfuscated to where you, by the time you got in and started questioning what the fuck is going on, the awesomeness of it and the urgency of it kind of carried the day.
Yeah.
I think, dude, if I was to give Gimple advice, I'd be like, stop with the fucking special effects from a story standpoint. Stop trying to go with all these flourishes and all these disjointed single POV episodes.
Oh, fucking with the timeline.
You put that shit
back
on the top shelf and you just tell a goddamn story that is consistent from end to end and string together eight good episodes. And then maybe you get those tools back off the shelf. Because they're just, like, sometimes they connect, But most of it's swing and a miss, and it's I lay it a lot at his feet at he sees other shows, and he gets excited to see what other shows are doing where they do these single-focus things, and they do this playing around with time, mm-hmm. and it's really compelling, but they don't know how to do it well enough. Because the other way is, I've kind of been defeatist and say, well, they're doing the show they want to do, and they don't give a shit what I think, and this is as good as it's going to be. At some point, you know, if I really believe that, then, you know, it's kind of like if I have the courage of my convictions and I'd be like, fuck this show, I'm out. So, sure. But if I was to give Gimple advice, it'd be like, you really, really, really need to step back, stop trying to do all this crazy gonzo stuff and just tell a goddamn story.
Yeah. I mean, he's certainly not helped by the fact, playing devil's advocate here, that he has this massive cast, right? I mean, that doesn't do you any favors when you're trying to tell this condensed, small story. Like, that's the thing that, like, The Leftovers has that this show doesn't have, is a very small cast of characters, right? 6-8 people max. This has 20-plus people. Yeah. And more than 8, like, maybe 12 that we are supposed to care about in this core group.
Yeah.
So it's tough. And, I mean, Game of Thrones, you know, is a good example for this, but... And we've talked about that at length. I won't go into it. But it seems like he does have some obstacles when it comes to how you structure a season that maybe some other shows don't.
Well, plus the budget. I feel like that it seems like the budget is weirdly strangled. So the other advice I'd give to AMC execs is, unless you want to see this wither away and die, you got to give them the budget to give decent action on a every other episode basis, at least. You can't have an extravaganza where you spend 90% of the budget in the first two episodes, and then we're doing bottle episodes.
But I feel like you do need those extravaganzas too, right?
Yes.
Like, you have to fund those extravaganzas.
Like, the way The Walking Dead can survive and thrive is to be season 3 of Game of Thrones, or season 4 of Game of Thrones. Every other episode feels like a finale.
Yeah.
In the urgency and the oh my god. And Walking Dead has the storyline to do that. You just can't be afraid to burn through it and to spend the money to do it right. You've got the money.
Yeah, I think that's the biggest complaint I have, is that they're just taking their time. They're dilly-dallying. They're lollygagging. They're doing nothing with a story that we know extends
What if the Double D's had done it at the Game of Thrones? Like, well, you know, George's only got the 5 books. We're still waiting on these 2. Like, we need to pump the brakes. Let's come up with a season and a half of bullshit that we can intersperse here and really. But they just fearlessly charge forward.
Yeah.
And maybe Kirkman's got more creative control, and he's, because I feel like we have not gained on the comics one bit.
No.
And the comic release is glacial.
Like, I mean, it might be a symptom of how they think about it as a 20-year show. That's crazy to me.
Well, then they need to catch up with the comics and then exceed it, because having to wait on the big beats of the comics is not doing the show any favors.
Yeah.
And now they're doing Fear the Walking Dead, which is totally original material, which is a nightmare and a train wreck. I don't know what the hesitance of just getting through the good stuff and telling it a very convincing, rapid-fire, fast-paced story. Like, they need to do that. They need to do that.
Yeah, I mean, Fear has its own problems that are not, like, the pacing of it necessarily.
Right.
Like, it kind of scooted through a lot of the stuff we wanted to see.
Well, but there again, that had to be budget.
Maybe so.
It's expensive to show the fall of a major U.S. city.
It is. Hugely expensive.
So let's just flash forward to the most interesting parts and slow down and tell the character story. But you're bad at that.
Yeah, but I mean, maybe that's the problem here. You know, they don't want to spend on, like, if they blew through a farm and a prison in one season.
There's probably people like, oh, well, you got to pick one. Do you want a thoughtful show or something? I want a season 1 Darabont show that I'm never going to get, but I would be happy with a pulse-pounding, you know, action-oriented drama like a 24 or a Banshee or any of those things other than what we're getting, which is a half-assed attempt to use character development as a way to not do action but really do terrible character development.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm with you. I don't know how much more we want to say about this.
I don't want to say any more.
Kind of gilding the lily at this point.
Yep.
So before we get into feedback, we've got a sponsor to talk about. It's a sponsor you're probably familiar with if you've heard this podcast before. It's Harry's.
The ironically named Harry's. Because they're dedicated to eradicating male facial hair.
They are, but also it's not spelled H A I It's Harry's, like the man named Harry.
It's a homophone.
So is that what it's called?
I think I'm making that up. I think that same sounding.
Homophone. Yeah, it's like Christmas and Xmas, right? They're just basically the same thing, but they're spelled differently.
Okay.
So speaking of Christmas, now is a perfect time to go shopping at Harry's because you've got a lot of people in your life, I'm sure.
Yeah.
That are male, right? They yeah. grow hair across their horrible faces.
Sure.
They got to get rid of that somehow.
Yep.
Harry's is there to help. And they've actually got a special holiday kit right now that they're selling, the Winter Winston set, I believe it is. And it's they're promoting it right now and giving you a discount if you use our code. You go to harrys.com, use the code BALDMOVE, all caps, and they'll give you $5 off that set, which is a good deal, especially since you're shopping for people who need this stuff.
It's a safe bet. Like, ask yourself, yeah. is the person I'm giving a gift to a man?
Mm-hmm.
Is that person have Harry has a traditionally clean shaven appearance?
Are they named Harry?
If you get to all three, then you have to. It's bald move law. Yeah. That's rule. Bald move rule number four. If a person a clean shaven male in your life is named Harry, you need to get him a Harry's package. What are we even talking about?
Sure. I mean, especially if they're a hipster, because the irony is not lost on them. Certainly.
Sure. Sure.
But yeah, you know, it's an easy gift too, right? It's like, you know, that's one of the biggest problems, the biggest hassles in the Christmas season is shopping for people.
Yeah.
And this makes it very, very easy. You can go online. You can do all your shopping there. Don't even have to leave the comfort of your own couch. And you know you're getting something that's quality.
Would you say this is a premium product, Jim?
Definitely. Yeah. I've tried other places, and this is definitely more premium than those by far.
Yeah. And if you compare them to, like, where you're going to get at a department store, like, you're getting twice the quality for half as much.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, you can go online and you can check out the prices of razors at retail.
Yep.
They are not nearly as good as Harry's, I can tell you that. So yeah, go check that out. Go to harrys.com, use the promo code BALDMOVE, all caps, one word, and you get $5 off your purchase, regardless of what it is. But check out that holiday gift set, because that's really the killer deal right now.
'Tis the season to shave your face.
We do have a lot of feedback.
Let's get to it. We're not doing any death predictions because it's mid-season, right?
That marker needs to go where feedback is going to start.
Well, also, we forgot to insert Club Bald Move. Maybe we need to do that at the beginning.
25 Days of Christmas
thing?
Yeah, I mean, we could do that as a pre-roll. I mean, do the Harry's pre-roll and then hit the... I don't know, because I jumped right into, what do you think about the season, that sort of stuff.
All right, we'll do something. Let's just go ahead and do the feedback.
Cool. So we're starting off with Eric Y.
Because we love you. Because
why not? That's what I say. He says, there are a number of unfinished threads in this season which are both providing story arc options in the future, which might be really exciting, and or will just be somehow dropped or ignored when things start up again after the break. And I think he's right about that. We're going to go through a few of them here.
Okay.
First of all, how did Rick escape the surrounded RV after killing off the wolf pack? I don't think I care.
I
don't think the show is going to care, and that's fine with me.
Yeah.
At the time, I was like, you know, I kind of would have liked to see that, but at this point, there's no going back to it.
No, and
it would be useless.
I was on board with, like, no. I saw the RV. It was half covered by walkers. There's a clear method of egress.
Yeah, go out the
driver's
side.
Rick just had
a
sprint. We saw him sprint to the gates. Done. Sure. Done. Like, that would be, going back and answering that story would be indulging in the worst of The Walking Dead's tendencies, in my opinion.
Yeah. Number two, the now dead wolf who stole the gun during the raid, who recognized Morgan, was their only encounter with Morgan, the one campfire scene back in season 5. Again, I don't think they need to go back to this, and I don't think they will. I think they've told all the story they want to tell with Morgan's road trip.
Yeah.
I don't think we'll see any more of a flashback of Morgan.
No. I mean, I don't know. Like, if they come up with an interesting hook that they need to flash back to Morgan's wandering period to flesh out, I'm fine with that. I like Morgan as a character.
Everything we know about Morgan, though, has been explained. Less now than I did at
the beginning of the season, but it's got to be something that from the new material that makes it worthwhile and will put it in context and be enjoyable. What do we need to go back to his wandering age to discover at this point?
Well, at this point, it would feel a little like retconning to me, right? Because you had this whole clear thing, and then he comes back and he shows up and he's okay now. Or more okay than he was, certainly. He's not clearing anymore. And you wonder why, right? So, like, if they go and they say, oh, something else happened to Morgan on his journey.
Yeah.
It would feel a little like retconning his journey to me. Because as far as we know, he's clearing for the vast majority of it.
He's clearing.
He runs into...
He's milking the goat, and then he's an Aikido pacifist master.
Exactly.
So what else would you introduce that would change that character arc?
I don't think you need to introduce anything.
All right.
Number three, I'm up in Canada and I've never heard of...
Muppet Canada?
I'm up in Canada and never heard of the Negan intro happening in the next show. He's talking about, that little bit that was in Into the Badlands after the fact. Says, I think this is balls and a crappy way to hook viewers. Will that make it into season six whenever it's posted on Netflix? That's an interesting question, right? Like, is that part of the show? Or is that not part of the show?
It's got,
Fear the Walking Dead isn't going to have those plain,
sure,
mini-sodes, right?
It's not like that. That is the way they packaged it is it's a preview of next season. So I fully expect that to be in the. You essentially spoiled yourself for 2 or 3 minutes of the first episode.
Okay,
probably the first 15 minutes of the first episode.
All right, maybe so. Only time will tell.
But yeah, no, if you just never see that scene again, like, it's a pivotal scene. You have to introduce it. So, yeah, it's of course it's going to be in the show. If not, then I think it's high time for you Canadians to take over America.
Okay.
How long are you going to allow this tyranny to your south? You're just going to let them dictate the terms of The Walking Dead to you?
That's a good point.
I mean, come in there and liberate us.
Yeah. If for no other reason than to just salvage The Walking Dead.
Yes.
Anyway, it says, I really hope the next season
as
is half
good as
better.
Any reason. Or,
I really hope the next season is half better. No, I really hope the next half season is better. If it was half better, I'd be out. Ike from London. In your last podcast, I heard you say that about 97% of the human population is dead. Is that canon or is that just your guesstimation?
I thought I saw something about 98% of the world being dead in The Walking Dead universe.
Yeah, but you might be confusing it with Leftovers, where 98% of the population is left. I'm not sure. I don't think that's canon. I can't recall ever hearing that as a fact. I think it's just a guess based on, the number of walkers we see and the number of people.
Okay, I'm going to do some quick background research while you go on.
Okay. He also asks how long Rick has been in his... Or how long it's been since Rick woke up from his coma. I don't really know. It's been a couple to a few years, at least. I think it's a little bit of a problem that I don't know, but not a huge one.
I don't. I feel like it's a lot like the Game of Thrones, where when you start to think about the timeline, it gets fuzzy, but you know enough to follow the plot. Like, they've had at least 2 winters.
Yeah.
And what else do you need to know?
He goes on, and the fact that the walkers can climb stairs to get to the entrance of the townhouses, doesn't that mean they are more than mindless flesh eaters? That was the original idea for this show. So, they talked about, we've got this Bible for the walkers, and they seem to have thrown that out the window.
Except
now
for
they
when
just
it's
have
convenient.
Them. Yeah, they have them do the things they need for them to do in the whatever scene they're shooting. Because if you go back to the beginning, walkers climb fences, walkers use tools to break glass. Walkers do a lot of things that you would associate with some kind of intelligence, right?
They flirted with that
straight out of Romero.
They've flirted with some of that with Morgan's wife, and they did. I know Poindexter did some experiments in Alexandria, and I fully buy that a fresh zombie has what I call these echoes of life. It's instinctual behavior that's imprinted, and as they decay, they lose more of that and become, so that's kind of like what I say in my headcanon. But you're right. They had a Bible that was supposed to keep them from doing what they've done, which is to be all over the map as far as whatever, zombies behave, however they need to behave at any given point of time. And they've gone away from that because shitty story writers don't want to have limitations on what stories they can tell.
Yeah, when in fact, I think a lot of times limitations make a story as good as it is.
You know? Necessity is the mother of invention. Like, yeah. How many times have I listened to the Insider Breaking Bad podcast where Vince Gilligan says, because our philosophy was to paint ourselves into corners at every opportunity, we came up with gonzo crazy stuff that was compelling and interesting, and we didn't stop until we had that.
Yeah.
That is vastly different from... I've never heard of stories from The Walking Dead story. I've hear incredible stories from the set of The Walking Dead and how much the actors love each other, and yeah. I believe that. It seems genuine. Mm-hmm. I have not heard a single story out of the writer's room.
Being like, oh, we had this major problem to solve, and here's the one
writer I interviewed who I asked him a fairly softball question about its relationship with minorities. Despite him being a minority himself, his response was, oh, I've never really thought of that. So, and you got, I also know that a lot of these guys' previous writing experience is Timon and Pumbaa and the Power Rangers or none at all. Sure. So what the fuck do they know about the culture of a writing room that would be informative or exciting or interesting? Well,
what the fuck do we know? That'd be their response.
No, that's what I'm saying. Like, I know I've heard Matthew Weiner talk about his writing team and the struggles that they've had. I've heard Damon. I mean, I don't know nothing. I've been doing this for 4 years and I've been reading these articles obsessively.
Yeah.
I'm saying I have zero insight into what goes on in the Walking Dead writing room. The stuff I do hear is unsettling.
Yeah, it's a bad sign.
It's unsettling and completely out of touch with what I'm seeing as a viewer.
All right, let's move on to Jennifer F. Since I heard this mentioned on another podcast, but I thought the Bald Move crew would appreciate it. I stopped watching the show mid-season, but I continue to listen to your podcast because it's still entertaining and laugh out loud funny at times. So I haven't verified this with my own eyes, but it was pointed out on another podcast that Alpha Wolf says consistently that he will kill Morgan, Carol, and the Alexandrians if he's freed at the first opportunity. But what does he do once he has a knife, two guns, and Eugene's machete? He walks out, killing no one. Is that crazy to you? That this guy who wants everyone to die and has the opportunity right here to just put bullets in all of them doesn't
take
it.
You're right. I understand why he would take a hostage, but why does he not?
Yeah. I mean, Tara, Eugene, and Rosita are there for the plucking. And nothing happens.
Are they really going to rehabilitate this guy?
God, no.
So,
I mean, they've tried for half a season now.
That seems kind of dumb.
Yeah.
That seems like you wouldn't call it a plot hole. You call it a character hole, I guess.
Well, it seems like they want to set up, Eugene, Tara, and Rosita to be like, how are we going to get Denise back? We need her. Like,
but that's blatant writer manipulation.
Sure.
Because you get the wolf. We've seen how the wolves behave. Yeah, Jesus Christ. That's the thing. Like, I said that many times last podcast. I feel like I'm off my bitching game. Because there's so many problems now. It was a lot more fun when 90% of the episode was good. It's just like they had Glenn fucking around in a well.
Mm-hmm.
Or Lori betraying Rick or Shane for the 13th time. I can miss those days, man. It's a lot more fun to cover.
Yeah, I'm with you. Bill from Houston says, I would like your thoughts on why the first part of this season derailed so much. Despite the criticisms that nothing really happened in a few episodes, I think the producers still managed to make the show collapse under too many plot developments. In previous seasons or half seasons, the driving force behind the plot would be just a couple events. For example, Carl getting shot and having to find Sophia, or a flu outbreak and the return of the governor, etc. But this half season has had way too many events occur in the span of 48 to 72 hours, no less, that just took me out of the show as being a farce. Here's a list. Spencer leaves the gate open and lets a few walkers in. Pete accidentally kills Reg, which leads to Rick killing Pete and the whole Ron Carl plotline. The truck in the quarry falls, leaving the walkers a means to get out. The wolves attack Alexandria. Negan's group shows up nearby. A church that's been standing for years finally falls and collapses on the wall. These are all events that are completely independent of each other. No matter how well they can handle each, the others would be happening anyway, leaving the group in Alexandria with such bad luck that I'm expecting Wacky Sax to be playing on the soundtrack any minute. Is this too much? Seems surprising to ask in a half season with at least three episodes where nothing really happened. So he's saying they're trying to do too much with these eight episodes that we got, and considering that three episodes were not even concerned with necessarily the main plot.
Huh. Well, it's hard to say that this is a boring season and simultaneously say that they were trying to do too much when there was so much filler.
The case he lays out is fairly strong, right? I mean, there is a lot of stuff that happens kind of independent of the other things.
That sounds like a lot of events, but you got 8 episodes, man. Like, think of how much shit goes on in Breaking Bad in a season.
Yeah, I suppose that's true.
Like, that's what you do. You throw conflict at your characters, and honestly, if this was well-constructed, you would be feeling that dread of, like, Rick thinks he's fucked because of this herd, but we also know that this threat's coming and this other threat is coming, and it would feel like an assault. And like, you know, the idea that Alexandria has been living in peace, relative peace, this whole time, I don't know. I'm trying to remember how they did in the comic book, but that feels kind of unbelievable. And maybe that's a problem. Like, you're postulating these baby people have survived throwing their cocktail parties and their extravagant cold rolled steel raising parties and been so out of touch and complaining about eating their baby carrots and shit. And but now all the shit has hit the fan. Like, I don't know. No, I don't think that's too much. I think that's about...
Okay.
And honestly, they probably needed 2 or 3 more big events in an 8-episode season.
Yeah, I mean, I guess maybe it's not too much. Maybe it is a problem of how they staged it all, because, like, what you said about the wolves kind of makes a lot of sense to me, which is we didn't feel any dread with the wolves, right? We kind of, like, we did as comic book readers. Like, we knew, oh, the wolves are coming. Right? The wolves are going to show up any moment. But you can't rely on that in a show of 17 million people watching.
They hinted at it. You know, there's all that stuff with the trucking facility and Morgan's run in with them and all that, but there wasn't...
But it never said they're an imminent threat.
No.
To this town. No. The only thing that was an imminent threat, and only this season, was this big stack of walkers in the quarry.
That we just discovered.
Now, if we had seen, oh god, there's a walker quarry ready to happen, and... we know the wolves are on a mission to take down Alexandria. Maybe that would have been a little more pressing and a little more interesting.
Well, the other thing is, instead of breaking away for these goddamn single point of view focused episodes, if it just was, you can also, like, you don't have to see it's coming. If it's just one damn thing after another, that's also exciting narrative hook.
Yeah, I just feel like
we got through 48 hours of show history in 8 episodes.
I don't know. I don't know.
That's honestly the thing. Like, it's a compressed time frame, but not a lot is, like, it does seem absurd that all this stuff is happening in a 48-hour span.
I don't know that that's true.
I'm pretty sure it's true.
I thought we had last episode or the episode before somebody lay it out as like 2 weeks.
I'm not saying from the time Reg died. I don't give a shit. That happened at the end of last season. This is a new season. I'm talking from the time the walkers bust out of that quarry.
I don't know that it's 2 days, but
I'm pretty sure it's 2 days, maximum 3. Is what we've been dealing with in Showtime from those times. And to me, that is, there's your absurdity right there. The fact is, all this is happening in 2 days. Okay. That might be a little stretch, but that they made that bed and laid down in it. And every time you got a little bit ahead of steam going, they'd break and tell you Morgan's story. And then every time you got a little bit ahead of steam about that, they break and tell you Abraham proposing to Sasha and Daryl laying next to a biker corpse in the burnt out woods that no one gives a shit about. Like, it's a problem.
Yeah, that's the thing I felt like Breaking Bad did so well, is it gave you flashes of people's history, but it also gave you a current timeline reason to care.
Yes.
Like, it would say, this is who Walt was before, and this is how it plays into why he's doing the things he's doing now.
Yes.
Or this is what Hank and Marie's relationship was, and here's how it's affecting things now. Yeah. Like, that all, like, tying the flashbacks into, in the same episode, in a cohesive package, it makes it feel more more warranted than Morgan doing his thing, and then... 2 episodes later coming in and saying, this is why I am who I am. Well, we know that now.
You get 30 seconds of Jesse looking at lipstick on a used up cigarette in his ashtray. Mm-hmm. And then 2 episodes later, you get a 3-minute cold open that explained how that lipstick got there and why Jesse was feeling the story didn't depend on those things. Those were the extras. Whereas, like, in the middle of this caper, let's sit down and do a Eric, or let's do a Jesse and, his girlfriend? Jane. Let's do a Jesse and Jane flashback episode for an hour.
Yeah.
In the middle of season 3. Like, right between half measure and full measure. Why the fuck not?
Right. It always felt like they did those in the lulls, right? Yeah, like, an episode like Fly came about naturally.
That's what I said at the time of the Morgan thing. There is a natural ebb and flow to storytelling.
Yeah.
And that's what I guess Gimple doesn't understand. Then that's why I'm saying put those adult tool shelves back on the top shelf and don't use them again until you grow up and understand.
Sure.
Like, Vince Gilligan cut his teeth on Monster of the Week episodes for X-Files.
Yeah, he did some schlocky bullshit, too.
But I'm saying, like, that, this is,
All right, moving on. Sarah W. says, I was listening to your mid-season finale podcast, and, wait. Okay, yeah. And during episode two, I was with Jim of the belief that Enid was a wolf. During this last podcast, Jim said that he no longer thought Enid was a wolf, and I started to have my own doubts about that during the front half of the season. But while listening to last week's podcast, you guys kept drawing parallels to Enid's The World Wants to Die soliloquy and the wolf's very similar rant to Denise. Now I find myself again thinking that Enid is at least had some interaction with the wolves before she came to Alexandria. I guess I just find it strange that while you guys were saying Enid and the wolf had similarities, Jim made it known that he no longer thinks Enid is a wolf. Seems to me there might be still the possibility, though it may be small. What do you think?
No. It's not. It's not. It's not
we know what you think. We know.
All right, you guys have a conversation.
There's no reason.
Let me know when you want me to chime in.
There's no reason to doubt what you think about it. I mean, it's like a series of events that, like, don't play out how I expected them to at all. And, like, I don't... The longer it goes without Enid being proven a wolf, the less likely it is, I guess.
Plus, you have people responding to identical trauma, having a similar worldview, but then espousing that, or the way that they live their lives based on that is completely radically different. And that happens in the real world all the time.
Yeah, I don't have a problem.
You have an immigration crisis. You had the exact same stimulus, the exact same people seeing the exact same problems, and one person wants to shut down the borders and not allow any immigrants, and the other person wants to do more of immigration and help them more and integrate them more, because that's the flip side. Like, Enid is having this trauma experience, and she wants to get away and never feel anything, so she never is that sad again in her life, which is a very kind of a leftovers point of view. And the wolf wants to go out and kill everything, because, you know, if he can't be part of the solution, then he's going to be part of the problem, which he sees as the solution. Those are same outlooks on life, dealing the same facts, but they have different results of the action. And Morgan is a third path where he just can't kill anybody. It's like, is Morgan a wolf?
No. The reason I thought that was way before any of this shit was espoused.
No, right?
There were clues that maybe could have been clues, maybe not.
I feel like the reason, she read a wolf comic book, which I think is a foreshadowing of the wolves, and she said that
she had some nebulous line.
Didn't see this, you know, or what they didn't know, or they weren't watching, or whatever. And I feel like I feel like I understand exactly why Enid's doing the things she's doing, and I understand exactly why the wolf's doing the things he's doing.
She's JSSing.
And also, I understand as well as I understand Morgan in one tenth of the screen time.
Okay.
Like, you don't, right? Yeah. Like, the wolf has had 15 minutes of screen time to espouse and to demonstrate his worldview. Enid's had about the same. Morgan's had, 3 hours at this point? That's crazy.
I feel like Morgan has... I don't know. That conversation he has with Rick went a long way toward improving that storyline for me.
But then they went and shit on it by having him do this Titanic... You know, that's not the actions of a man who's unsure.
Sure.
So I guess he was lying to Rick in that conversation?
You can be unsure and still taking actions. I mean, it's not like you're positive that it's the right thing to do. You're just positive that's what you're going to do.
Yeah.
But, like, I don't know. I softened on Morgan once he had an actual conversation and expressed a fairly nuanced point of view, even if, like, I don't agree with the result of it and I don't think he's doing the right thing. He's telling me that he's not sure of it either, and I respect that in a certain way.
Yeah, I just...
Like, you're going to do what you're going to do. I'm not sure of it, but whatever.
Yeah. No, but that even then, that's still ignoring how I feel as an audience member seeing Morgan taking these selfish risks with innocent men, women, and children. Sure. You know, it's like, fine, you believe this. So, like, I feel like that. It's interesting. So, if I was doing a morality alignment, Dungeons and Dragons style, Morgan would be the neutral, and then the wolf would be the evil form, and then Enid would be the good form of this worldview. Or no, I'm sorry. Enid's the neutral, and Morgan's the good. Morgan won't kill anybody regardless of the reason. The wolf will kill everybody for no reason, and Enid just wants to be alone, so when people die and stuff, she's not affected by it, mm-hmm. either way. She's not going to kill anybody, and she's not going to, except for turtles, and she's not going to not kill anybody.
She's going to peace out.
Yeah.
JSS. All right, moved on to... Ryan M. says, I liked what you said about how the sequencing of this of the episode, specifically waiting to explain the Glenn storyline, led it to be a weaker season. I at first agreed, but then I thought if we saw Glenn roll under the dumpster at the end of the episode, then took the 3-episode break to figure out how he got out, we would be super disappointed in the beginning when we revisited him and basically just waited it out. Seems more anticlimactic.
That's the problem. Don't silo this shit up. Just stream it all together so you don't have to wait 3 episodes to see what happened to Glenn. This is all happening in real time. It just happened herky-jerky Pulp Fiction style. But there's not a strong enough character and not a strong enough narrative point of view to hold our interest of that kind of stuff.
Yeah, no, I agree.
And, like, that's the thing. Like, the points of view hold together for Pulp Fiction are interesting because they're also radically different in tone and feel and kind of coolness and action, but yet they all kind of come together at the end in a satisfying way, where The Walking Dead is telling the same goddamn story 4 different times simultaneously.
Yeah, that's a problem. I don't enjoy that part of it. Kyle Y says, I really enjoyed listening to your podcast and coverage of The Walking Dead the last few seasons. Thank you. I only wish my enjoyment would carry over towards season 6 and the mid-season finale. What a major letdown. This mid-season finale demonstrates how the showrunners have really dropped the ball. My wife and I both decided to skip the rest of this season. We'll wait until it comes out on Netflix to catch up, because at least we can fast-forward through any future Morgan episodes. I do have one question. Has either of you tried or heard about the StorySync app they keep advertising? Is this app intended to make better sense of the fragmented story and timeline? First of all, I have looked at it, and I've seen the kind of information they put up. It is meant more as like a, here's an interesting factoid, almost like a commentary. And like, here's how this ties into previous episodes. Yeah. Not like, here's what you should be knowing about this right now in the moment. Mm-hmm. It's more just like historical stuff and facts about like weapons and just different stuff. That's interesting little factoids.
I think that's why Walking Dead is becoming a binge show, and I feel like that's why I'm annoyed when Gimple's like, oh, well, you know, this is a Netflix generation. It's like, well, fuck you. You're still broadcasting this a week at a time.
Yeah.
It would be, if I was a film student or like trying to study editing, it'd be super interesting to take this season and cut it together in a chronological, compelling order, because there's not, some of this material is good, and it's the artificial pacing problems that they're introducing that it's further weakening material. None of it's great.
Yeah, and a lot of it is bad.
but you know what I'm saying? Like, if you cut this apart scene by scene and take that Daryl and Abraham stuff and you intersperse that with the stuff that's going on in Alexandria and the stuff that's going on with... And again, you take the Morgan and maybe... Just like I said this with the Governor 3-episode plot lines, what if you take the Morgan episode and you made it a cold open for each episode that leads up to the kind of Jack versus Locke showdown between Carol and him at the end? Mm-hmm. I think that would be super interesting. Or if the season just opened up with, this is how Morgan got to be the way they were. I just, you know.
Yeah, maybe.
I feel like a lot of this was the avant-garde way he was trying to tell the story, and it just fell flat.
Yeah. We shouldn't need a fucking app to tell us the rest of the story.
Yeah, this is the Talking Dead syndrome, right?
Exactly. Like, if you have to have a second screen experience to tell me what's happening on the first fucking screen, you've already lost.
Yeah. And, you know, like I said, it's Talking Dead. Like,
I saw, speaking of The Talking Dead, Steve W. sent in an email. Not sure if you've seen this, but you've probably gotten it from others by now. Have you seen the Jimmy Kimmel show that Chris Hardwick did? So he came on Jimmy Kimmel's show, and he did a spot where in the middle of Jimmy Kimmel's monologue, he busted it in with his own, like, middle show, exactly like The Talking Dead, like he would in the commercials.
Awesome.
Be like, and they went on for like 4 or 5 minutes on it, and it was just perfect, and it shows you that at least Chris Hardwick is a little bit self-aware.
No, I think Chris Hardwick is probably a cool dude.
That's the thing.
He shares
we blow
a lot
him
of
some
the
shit,
same
but...
frustrations that we do with some of this stuff.
And is in no position to comment about it.
Yeah. Like, if
it's
I
his
was,
fucking job.
If I was getting like... paid to host this show, I would do it in a different way. Because, like, I am, above all, I am a professional. Like, you can't tell because my professional job in Bald Move is to be a jackass.
Sure, yeah, yeah.
But, like, if you've worked with me in any kind of real career, like, that's probably, like, I emphasize being a professional. So, like, if this was my job, I would do it, you know, like, I'm taking the paycheck, I do the job I'm being paid to do.
Sure.
So, like, I don't really have, like, and it'd be, like, it'd be funny if I, like, meet this guy 5 years, 10 years down the line to kind of swap notes about our Walking Dead experiences. But yeah. No, I don't blame him. But it's like, you know, that's other things. Like, The Talking Dead, that was the first fan podcast by our buddies Jason and Chris. And The Walking Dead, like, I hear about how fucking fan-friendly this show is. They just go and jack their name.
Sure.
Because they can.
Uh-huh.
And, like, maybe Chris and Jason has a net positive because that probably gets them. I know for a fact it got them a lot of mistake, you know, a lot of people stay around and, like, oh, this is better than The Real Talking Dead. But that's just a jackass move, man.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, we've done that. We've gone searching for podcast names before and gone, oh, that's already taken. We can't use it. So
yeah, that's why if some of our podcasts have boring ass names, that's how we ended up with the Game of Thrones podcast. We had a really good name. We had to stop that and cease it, and now there's 47 podcasts. You just can't jack someone's name, man.
Sure.
That's symptomatic of the laziness. Like, these guys can't do a Google search, or they've done the Google search, like, well, it's just a fan podcast. No one's going to stop us from doing this. Like, we'll cease and desist them if they complain. Fuck you guys.
Yeah. All right, moving on. Kim in San Diego has some good, bad, and ugly here. The good, Carl. I agree that he remains the most consistent and compelling character on the show. It's telling that the good is the shortest section of this email. That's all the good she's got.
No, Rick and Carl still maintain the good core of this show, and Carl is now weirdly the strongest character.
Yeah, and I kind of like the way he's dealing with Ron. Like, it shows a little initiative.
Like, and I'm thinking, like, if you knew that's what you're going to do with Carl, why do you give Glenn the fucking dickless plot that just cuts the legs out from under? Because it's the same goddamn thing.
You're right. Yeah, it's similar. Nah. I don't know. Let's go on to the bad, because I'm sure you'll have plenty to complain about. Too many characters to develop successfully. In addition to Glenn, I'm ready for at least 3 of the following characters to be gone. Eugene, Sasha, Abraham, Rosita, Maggie, Father Gabriel, or Tara. Yeah. I could do without 3 of them. Why not? They're all background noise that takes story and development time away from compelling characters. And the ugly. The Walking Dead is in desperate need of a script editor with the authority to call BS before the shooting begins. I would say they would call bullshit.
Mm-hmm.
Can I believe in a miraculous headshot from a moving vehicle at moving targets? Sure. I can also believe in a baby remaining quiet with her head covered with a smelly tarp and that zombies exist, but I don't buy that the sadist wolf would spill no blood when he has 6 people at his mercy.
That's a good point.
Yeah.
And also, you can't have a character hanging off a wall that's making headshots from 30 yards, and then the next episode, you can't have her taking a shot with a known killer and letting him be armed. Like, it's just stupid. It's stupid. That would be stupid for Jack Bauer to do with FBI backup. The fact that they're doing it, and it's just dumb. And yeah, I would say another thing. It's like, I don't not like any of those characters, but they've introduced 3 or 4 new characters in this season. You got, what, Heath? You got Denise?
Sure.
You got Spencer, which I know he's not exactly new, but he's looked like he's primed to take a bigger role. You got Morgan.
And Ron.
He's come back. You got Ron. Yeah. You got Jesse. What is Eugene doing now? Like Eugene is treading water. Despite a lot of screen time, is making zero character. So I'm as much as I like Eugene and I see him as good comic relief when he's done well. Some of these characters need to die to make room for the new ones.
Yeah, I mean, it's that problem with the massive cast we talked about.
Right.
And the verdict, which I think we will both probably disagree with. I still love the show. There are a few television programs that I consider better, but none of them are more engaging. I still lose track of time when I watch The Walking Dead. I can't wait for February 14th.
I can't agree with that because I'm acutely aware of the passage of time when I'm watching The Walking Dead.
And when I'm watching Leftovers, I lose all sense of time.
And it's not all episodes. Like, I quite enjoyed, I know, like, the first two episodes, I didn't have that problem. Like,
I lost track of time in the finale, frankly.
Not in a good way.
But I thought they were going to do more with it, is the problem. Like, I look down and there's 2 minutes left, and I'm like, oh, they haven't really done anything here.
Right.
Shit.
Right. So, yeah, it's not engaging.
I'm with you. I agree. But, you know, she has different opinions. Scott V. Why do you guys think that the characters resist taking out walkers that are easy targets? I mean, we've talked about this, you know, at length, I think. He makes some points that I guess we maybe have or haven't made. He says, aren't you helping out someone with every walker you take out? Maybe even yourself? But also, as a society, wouldn't the norm just become clear walkers when it is relatively safe? I think, yeah, that's kind of the point we've
been going
on
about. Especially in your home territory. Like, I own 10 acres, and I see a patch of poison ivy. I don't be like, I'll just avoid it. Like, I'm going to destroy that patch of poison ivy.
Because you know it's probably going to be a problem later on.
Yeah, because I might itch. I might get itchy later if I'm not paying attention. It's a whole other story when you got something that could bite you and kill you, mm-hmm. or someone you love. Now, I've never, ever, that's one of my zombie survival 101 things I used to rail about. If you have a chance to kill a zombie without expending a bullet, do it.
And if you have a chance to kill someone before they become a zombie, but are inevitably going to, do it.
Oh, all the that's inexplicable to me.
Yeah.
The many times survivors watched a person getting torn apart and did nothing to stop it.
It's shocking. Like, those are horrible people.
Yeah.
They're the worst.
Yeah, that's something.
That's not a group I would want to be around.
Well, that's something the show has trained me to associate with people like the governor.
Okay.
The governor would do shit like that.
Yeah.
But our heroes don't.
They shouldn't. They do, but they
shouldn't.
Merle
would do something like that.
Okay.
But.
Merle's a shitbag.
Yeah.
All right, moving on. Nick M. says, so for the first time in a while, they failed to excite me enough to count down the days until the show returns. I will be tuning in for the sole purpose of listening to you two tear the show apart. For weeks now, I've been refreshing my phone until the Instacast come out to agree with all the points you make. And The Talking Dead, why does this dude still say spoilers even though he comes on an hour after the episode? I think we've talked at length about that.
Yeah.
He says, is every guest / cast member so full of themselves that they truly think they're doing a good job? If not, they sure make a better effort to act like they're making quality TV than the effort they put into acting in the show. Now, I take issue with that. I think the acting has been fine to good it's been fine to great. Most of these characters several of them being great.
You get some of the guest stars, you know, notable exceptions, of course. You know, we had Twisty the Clown come in, do an awesome job with Morgan. But yeah, some of the Dawns from Slaptown, and it gets a little hairier along the edges. But yeah, the main cast, I think, is mostly excellent.
Yeah, they're playing the characters they need to play. I think look at Deanna
in the final episode. Like, again, if I gave a shit about Deanna, that would be some moving, gripping stuff. And showing more character than she has as this... I mean, she's played kind of like... the guy in the final season of 24 that we covered, we called him President Grandpa because he always had that kind of vacant smile on his face and wearing the Andy Griffith as a Matlock suit. And
be fair, he had Alzheimer's. So.
That also, my grandpa died of Alzheimer's, so come at me. I can make that joke.
Deanna, playing it, right?
Deanna felt like Congressman Grandma. She's just kind of got that glassy smile and like, they're your people, Rick. And that's not the way we do things here. And you gotta know if I can trust you. And it's Then they give her some fire in her belly in the last episode. I'm like, where the fuck has this Deanna been? Mm-hmm. Deanna's been vacant, glassy smile, catatonic, and that's kind of been her emotional range.
Yeah. Yeah. I think they did a lot to fix her at the very end, but that's what they do on this show. They kind of don't give you a reason to care until they do, and then they kill him. But the other thing is, like, yeah, I think everybody thinks they're doing fantastic work here based on everything I hear. You know, we hear from the actors saying, oh, this is the best season yet, every single time.
I do believe they have a lot of fun, and I do believe that they are.
And that shades an actor's opinion, you know? Sure. It's got to.
And they genuinely, it seems like a good set, and they like working with the writers and directors, and they think that what Scott Gimple's doing is awesome, and they go on these, every time they go and do a big, fan tour, everyone shows up and loves them, so.
Yeah, that
why not?
Doesn't help.
Why not? And I don't like, you know, like I would be upset if I heard that Norman Reedus or Andrew Lincoln listened to this podcast and thought, you know, like really were bummed out about it, because I don't feel like, you know, maybe the problem is this isn't show just isn't for me.
Well, I mean, we're criticizing not directly the work that they do on this show, but the work they're a part of. And I think they would take offense to that. I think that's a natural reaction.
Yeah, that's true.
But my criticisms don't lie with the actors in this show for the most part. I think my criticism lies largely in the writing and directing.
I don't understand why they're caring, because, yeah, I can understand if they're like, oh, yes, I like working with Norman Reedus, and I'm, you know, Melissa McBride, and I like these actors, and they do great performances and all that stuff. I don't understand why, like, the Norman Reeduses of the world and Andrew Lincolns continually say, like, oh, that's Scott Gimple. Man, just everything he puts on the page is just sparkling, and he, like, spends so much time thinking about it and all that stuff. Like, maybe he does, and I'm back to my old, well, maybe they're just not experienced enough to pull it off. And as an actor, you won't know that, right? Like, when you get on, I feel like that must be a real high wire act when you're an actor. Like, sometimes when you're in the middle of the production, it feels like it's a disaster and you know it. But I bet there's a lot of times where you feel like, wow, I'm really nailing these scenes and I really connect emotion to this material. And by the time it gets through editing and special effects and music and post-production and all that, it's like, oh shit, this didn't work. And then what do you do?
Yeah, I mean, ultimately it's the same problem that Chris Hardwick has, right? Where's he getting his paycheck? Mm. His paycheck is coming from the people who tell him to say great things about this show, because that's what he's paid to do.
Yeah.
So,
and they're actors. You also never forget these people are actors.
Yeah.
They can cry on demand and laugh on demand. And so it's not hard for them to say stuff like, this is the greatest. You know, if Andrew Lincoln can deliver with a straight face a 30th iteration of, you don't know what it's like out there, then he can surely say Scott Gimple is a genius writer.
Especially when he doesn't have to put on an accent, right?
Yeah, right?
Makes it a little easier.
Yeah.
Final email, Andrew T. says, Walking Dead is like a Hostess cupcake. From a distance, it looks great. Has everything I should enjoy in it. Drama, gluten, frosting, zombies, horror, mullets. I consume them hoping for something great and ultimately end up disappointed. Here's a Leftovers reference I don't know that many people are going to get. After wanting to check into Virgil's hotel for live watching The Walking Dead rather than The Leftovers, it's finally occurred to me that what I dislike about the show. The writers consistently take the lazy way out. Rather than making the antagonist better, they always make the heroes worse. Mm-hmm. They don't create a scenario where the wolf mind-bones Morgan into letting him go and becoming a threat. Rather, they make Morgan dumb, Carol weak, Rosita, Tara, and Eugene incompetent. A single zombie shouldn't be able to get the better of Morgan and an Aikido master, but let's just have the hero offer up his muffin top. A horde of slow-moving zombies coming from a single direction isn't a real threat, so let's have everyone fall down. Daryl, Abraham, and Sasha are in a heavily armored car with assault rifles and rocket launchers. How can a bunch of guys on motorcycles be a threat? Well, let's just have them stop, get out, and ready to be disarmed. The heroes are consistently made to look like fools rather than make the villains more conniving, craftier, and more dangerous. Yeah, I think that's a point well hit there. I never feel like people are doing the things that I expect them to do.
Yeah.
They're reacting in ways that make absolutely no sense to me, given who they are and the scenario put before them.
Well, that's cool. You know, like, if the wolf had, as soon as they put the guns down, picked up the gun and shot them all, that would have been really interesting.
And perfectly within his character.
And then it's like a real tragedy that, like, there's consequences that this battle between Carol and Morgan have.
Yeah.
And, you know, from Rick's perspective, he might never get the answers of what actually happened. That's kind of interesting, but you got to have the guts to kill, like, five main characters.
There's that, yeah.
But if you don't, then don't engineer that situation.
Yeah. Yeah, engineer situations that people are going to act like themselves in.
Yeah, and it's, like, weird because I feel like that doesn't happen a lot in the comic books. Like, Kirkman, when he puts characters in a situation where naturally they would die, he fucking kills them.
Yeah.
And they don't do that in the show, and partly because there's all this weird stalling tactics and hopping on one foot to the next, but...
Yeah. He says, anyways, happy holidays. Hope Santa gets you both the sheiks you deserve. Which is a reference Walking Dead fans will get.
Hey, speaking of happy holidays, I know this has been a bummer if you've listened to this, and it's no fun to record this kind of podcast.
Sure.
But on the other hand, Jim and I swore that we would never sugarcoat stuff just because to make it not a bummer.
Mm-hmm.
We are doing something kind of cool. We're doing a 25 Days of Bald Move Christmas where we decided to hang our Bald Move studio tree with 50 bottles, airline bottle sizes of booze.
Yep.
And there's two bottles of 25 distinct types of liquor. And every morning we come into the studio, we do a, like, you know, we open up some fan mail, we show some really cool stuff, we pull one of these bottles of liquor down, we drink it, we sing this 25 verse song, the 25 Days of Bald Move Christmas. There's a new video every day. On Fridays, since we don't record on the weekends, we drink three bottles.
Back to back to back.
Back to back to back. And then we jump on to do lunch with Jim and Aaron. And right people afterwards. Are saying it's a lot of fun. We're having a lot of fun. Maybe it's worth $1 a month. If you want it, it's a premium feature. You got to go to club.baldmove.com and sign up.
Mm-hmm.
Hell, after Christmas is over, you can just sign up for the month, or, you know, $12 for the year. And you get ad-free feeds and all the premium features that we do, which you can find all that about on club.baldmove.com. But I just wanted you to know that if you're wanting a little extra bald move and you want to see us in a stress-free, more drunken environment, then maybe it's worth $1 or $2 to kick in for the club to see that.
All right, we've got a little bit of a spoiler section to do, right?
Yes.
Okay, so if you're into spoilers, stick around after the music. If not... I mean, you can contact us. We're probably not going to be back on Walking Dead until
February-ish.
Next season, February. So you can contact us at watchingdead@baldmove.com or, you know, Twitter or Facebook or anything.
But yeah, week before the season goes live, come on back and we'll talk about it.
Yeah, absolutely.
After the dust has settled. Hopefully there'll be some trailers, some teasers.
Yeah, something we can talk about and hopefully be excited about going into the new season. But yeah, if you want spoilers, stick around after the music. And if not, we'll see you in February. And until then, I'm Jim.
I'm Aaron. See ya.
And we're back with the spoiler section. I got a couple of emails. Do you have anything you want to talk about before we get to those?
Okay.
Or maybe afterwards.
So, you know, by the time you've heard me talk about this enough, Glenn, the introduction of Negan.
Beat to death with Lucille.
Yeah. So Rick's triumph over these adversities in Alexandria in the comics builds a false sense of confidence. So, like, I've handled the governor. I've handled the Terminus folks, the hunters in the comics. I've handled these wolves. I've handled this zombie herd. Negan is another bunch of soft people that think that people are going to kowtow to them, and he decides to roll tough against them. And as a result, Glenn gets, you know, Negan, who's a formidable person of his own and has many, 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 many men loyal to him, rolls in there, emasculates Rick and bashes Glenn's head in.
That'll do it.
After they did this hot foot with Glenn's death, mm-hmm. can they do that with Glenn? Because I feel like this is kind of my evidence. I feel like that even more stronger that it's going to be someone besides Glenn that gets beat to death. It's going to be a Morgan. It's going to be a Daryl. It's going to be someone that the audience cares about, but it can't be Glenn because they just did this shit with him. And they've expended all that emotional energy. Can they really beat Glenn's brains out at the end of this upcoming half season and have people feel genuine feelings about it?
Before I give you my answer, let me read Ryan from Florida's email.
Okay.
Because it deals directly with this. He says, it's Ryan from Florida. Thank you, Ryan from Florida. I've got a spoiler prediction for the second half of season 6. Negan now has Abraham, Daryl, and Sasha prisoner. At least I hope. Why would he take their stuff and let them go without interrogating them? This is how he finds out about Alexandria. He then takes them back to Alexandria, which has just cleaned out its zombie infestation. Out front of the gate, he plays Eeny, Meeny, Miny, Moe with Lucille, ultimately landing on Daryl instead of one of the other two. Why Daryl, you ask? It has to be a beloved character in order to make us all passionately hate Negan, and all of those are protected. Glenn is safe due to his horribly written brush with death. Maggie is pregnant. Michonne will presumably be in the armory, and it can't be Rick or Carl because there is no story without them. Sure, it could be Abraham or Sasha, but I don't think it will generate the same outrage. Also, maybe that explains why Daryl never gets his crossbow back from Dwight. I'd love to hear your opinions. So,
well, my problem with that is that if they tell it that way, I'll be outraged because the real tension in this story is the fact that this is the first time that Rick kind of fucks up.
Yeah,
his strategery causes the Alexandrians and himself to experience real pain. Mm-hmm. And so if Negan, oh God, I still can't get used to saying Negan. If Negan rolls up,
yeah,
to Alexandria and meets him for the first time, because that's the other thing. The comics, the Alexandrians understand Negan, and that's just the cost that they, they're like the grasshopper. They're like the ants in the grasshopper and ants parable. It's like, well, we have to forge twice as hard so we can give this maniac money so he will leave us, or a tribute so he'll leave us alone.
Uh-huh.
And Rick saying, get on before you get spit on to one of Negan's flunkies is what brings Negan back with Lucille. If he just rolls up after capturing these people and kills them, it's going to completely neuter that part of the plot line. So I feel like that they're going to bring these people back and they're going to be like, you know, we want tribute from you, or we'll give your men back. And Rick is going to be like, I've got a better offer, and kill every one of them but one and send him back to Negan and say, hey, you tell your boss that he can go fuck himself.
Yeah.
And that's what's going to trigger the thing.
You're right.
If they don't do some version of that, then what the fuck, Kirkman?
Yeah.
Like, that'll be the worst remix.
It would just show him,
remix of all.
It would just show him being crazy, like psychotic, rather than having a purpose in the things he does, right?
Yes.
Like, to just bring them there and kill them and say, here we are, seems silly. I'm with you. I guess I don't know that I buy totally that Glenn has a shield, considering how tone deaf they were with the Glenn stuff in the first place. I don't know that they understand that the fan reaction would not be positive if they threaten or kill Glenn going forward.
Well, so where
for at least a while.
So I know that Gimple says, and Nick, and they have all said, like, oh yeah, the audience reaction to Glenn was positive, but
bullshit.
The damage control they did in the weeks after that belies that. Like, I feel like that penetrated the shield.
Oh, maybe so. Maybe so.
Will that moderate their behavior? Fuck, I don't know, but...
Exactly. It's tough for me to believe that anything is going to get them to say, you know what, we need to reevaluate what we're doing here, because...
I mean, there is juice to squeeze there. Like, Glenn is, you know, Maggie's in a family way, and I still kind of sort of care about their relationship.
I know that's the trouble.
And
if
that happens right in front of Maggie's eyes, and you know, she does the Beth reaction, which would be earned in the moment, and everyone just horrified, and Glenn just gets graphically beat to death. Like, I'm not saying I wouldn't feel nothing, but doing this fake out death would definitely, you know, like I'm an emotional sponge. You can only wring so much out of me.
Yeah.
Before I need to soak in the bucket and get those tears back.
Yeah.
you know.
They need to soak Glenn for a while. I don't think that they can do this without any backlash.
Okay. I don't think so either.
And I mean, I don't know that they can't kill Maggie because she's pregnant. They killed Lori when she was pregnant, although...
They spared Judith.
They did spare Judith, yeah.
Which I still can't figure out. They can't do that
with Maggie at this point.
I don't know why Kirkman decided keeping a newborn around this cast is a great idea.
Because maybe... I don't know.
And at the pace of telling the story, they're going to have to recast her like a million times.
That's true, yeah. But I don't know.
Maybe she'll be a five-year-old in diapers, and we'll just be expected to believe that, you know.
Yeah. I guess I don't think... that a lot of these characters have shields that are as strong as Ryan's trying to say here. But I don't know. I don't know. We'll see what they do.
And I think also killing Abraham, they could do that because they could kill Abraham off and it would be medium impactful.
Well, I mean, that's his point, right? It's not as impactful as like a Glenn or Maggie or something or no. Daryl.
I mean, you have to kill a season 1, season 2 person.
Yeah.
To have maximum impact. So that's a death. That's and I agree. Carl and Rick off the table.
Sure.
So that leaves Glenn, Maggie, Daryl.
All right.
Carol
too.
Carol's actually ripe for the plucking.
She kind of is.
I don't, we talked about this like a last season and I thought that, you know, she really hasn't changed. I guess no, she's still kind of slowly descending in the clear Morgan era. Uh-huh. So I guess there's still some interesting things, but I don't know where heroically she can go from here. So maybe killing her off, and she's like one of the last of the Darabont crew, right?
I think so, yeah.
And it seemed like that they were, maybe she just really drank the Kool-Aid and got on board with it, but it seemed like there was a concerted effort to purge all the Darabonites for a good season, or maybe that was a Mazera axe to grind, I don't know.
Yeah, I'm not sure. And he just couldn't kill them all in one or two seasons. But
so really, if they want to go maximum real audience shock impact, you got Judith, which that would be
just beating a baby to death with a bat
it'd be horrific.
I don't know that you can even do that.
Well, especially since they put her in danger so much that like if he was doing that the whole time, it'd be like, well, what's going to happen to stop it?
That's pretty fucking dark,
right?
Like beating a baby to death. There's nothing good about that.
Right.
For anyone.
But we're talking about Carol, Daryl, Glenn, and Maggie.
Yeah. The choices are a few.
Yeah.
All right. Rachel from Michigan says, in the comics, Negan captures Abraham's girlfriend, Holly. He thinks he has captured Rick's girlfriend, Andrea, because they both have blonde hair.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I was thinking, since they are pairing off Abraham and Sasha, what if Negan captures Sasha and he thinks it's Michonne? After she and Rick start dating soon, since that will obviously happen, I hope. What do you think? They haven't shown me any sign that Rick and Michonne are going to get together.
No, but...
it's still Rick and Jesse.
But there is that cultural, you know, fan knowledge, the fan culture that has seen their chemistry...
Oh, sure. Yeah.
Like her open up the Rick and kind of vice versa. And I feel like that everyone would buy it if they wanted for them to get together.
Definitely.
And also, I think if this goes down like the comic, this little horseshit cliffhanger we got here,
mm-hmm.
Jesse and her entire family dies.
Okay.
I feel like Ron is going to be the one that shoots Carl in the face.
Mm-hmm.
And there's going to be some interesting things going on that. But. Jesse's going to be swept to the side. Like, already setting it up. Like, Sam is going to balk. She's not going to let go of Sam. She's going to get pulled into the zombie crowd, and Rick will have to do what he has to do.
Mm-hmm.
But no, I don't think Jesse's going to make it out of, like, the next episode or two.
Okay. And then it's perfectly natural, I agree, for Rick and Michonne to hook up. I think that's awesome. So, yeah, I could totally see that happening.
That would be
interesting.
They
don't have Andrea
around. They kidnap Sasha instead of Michonne, thinking that that's, you know.
And now that we know they're pushing for that, or at least Abraham is pushing for that, Sasha's a little resistant, but they want to hook them up. So,
Yeah, that's really true. But, you know, on the other hand, by that point in the story, Abraham's dead, too.
Okay.
So
well, I don't mind.
I was shocked. I felt like when Kirkman killed off Abraham, he was going to the Tyrese well,
okay.
Like just a shocking, pointless death of a main character, just to remind you that he can do that.
Yeah, yeah.
So I wouldn't mind seeing Abraham stick around, And it's certainly, if you're gonna, you know, if you're gonna have him make off with Sasha, or you know, if they want to gender flip it, and Negan takes Abraham because he sees his big badass in the field and assumes, oh, this has got to be the fearless leader of Alexander we've all heard about.
Oh, I was gonna say like. It's some dude with ridiculous hair and he's a real fool, and they take Eugene thinking it's Abraham.
Well, I mean, there's so much ridiculous hair. That could be Carl. That could be Eugene. That could be Daryl. That could be Abraham. Like, how do you want to define ridiculous hair?
Well, that's what I mean, right? It's a little ambiguous.
It's pre-haircut and shave Rick. Like, yeah. No, that's a strong theory. I like that.
Gender flip.
And I can kind of see... Well, not to gender flip. I don't think they're going to do that.
Okay.
But... doing the old girlfriend switcheroo,
yeah,
is a fairly decent idea for a remix for with what you've got going on.
Yeah, you don't have multiple blondes ready to be sacrificed.
Sure.
So what are you gonna do? That's all the emails I have. Do you have anything else you want to talk about?
No, that's it. Other than like, you know, like, man, I just feel like I always get in trouble thinking about how this show can pull off the comic books.
Nope. Don't do it, man.
That's what I'm saying. Like, I'm kind
of excited. Don't get excited because of what you hope is coming up.
And like, you know, and so I'm again. I thought about reading the comic line in the off season and catch up to the point where we're at right now. Mm-hmm. I don't think I'm going to do it. Okay. I'm gonna maybe at the end of next season or at the end of this upcoming half season, I might read up to the point to see kind of like and give a how things worked in the comics versus how things worked in the television show. Kind of like how I do with Game of Thrones sometimes, give that a try. But yeah. I don't think it's going to do the show any favors. I'm really glad I didn't go back and refresh my memory because, yeah.
All right.
The fact that there's so much cool story ahead and we're just dragging our feet, dribbling out the story a little bit at a time, it would be even more frustrating.
Yeah, I'm definitely not going to go read them. It's not my thing. So, I guess for everybody who stuck around, we'll be back in a couple months. See how the shit show ends. The shit show of a season 6 finally wraps up. But, yeah, we'll see you guys then.
All right, bye.